Revenue Committee and the Transportation Committee. And we have a presentation from Mr. Hewitt, Chairman of the Transportation Commission. And I believe Grace Finnegan is also here, and Senator George, member of the Transportation Committee, about a month ago, made a presentation to us. And the purpose of that presentation was to try to reconcile your differences in opinions or numbers or whatever, so that those of us who have to get the opportunity to determine what are the needs of our Department of Transportation, our highway programs, we'll be able to make an intelligent, informed decision. So we welcome you back, Mr. Hewitt, and what we will do today is allow you to proceed with your testimony, and then I'd like to stop every so often and allow members of the committee, before you wrap up the entire thing, to see if they have some questions they'd like to pose, and we'll move on in installments.
That'd be
fine. Thank you, and we welcome you.
Thank you, Chair Miller, members of the committee. For the record, I am Henry Hewitt. I chair the Oregon Transportation Commission. And as Senator Miller described, I was here about a month ago and made a presentation to the committee regarding transportation needs, transportation funding. And prior to my making that presentation, Senator George made a presentation, a slide presentation, and we agreed to return to the future meeting to address the issues raised by Senator George's presentation. And this is the purpose of our meeting today. Since that time, we have been provided a copy of the slides that Senator George presented at that hearing. There were 41 of them presented at the meeting, and I think we've received an additional 17 supplementally that we've considered as well. We have worked since we got those slides preparing a notebook which has been provided to each member of the committee, where we've tried to address in a reasonable and appropriate way every one of the slides that Senator George has presented. We've attempted to be fair in our responses and to be responsive as well. Preparing the notebook was no small task, and I'm certain that the responses won't deal with all of the issues to everyone's satisfaction. I think I've encouraged the committee to review the notebook. I'm prepared to come back and address specific issues, as is the department. I think that there will always be issues, and there will always be more slides, and I think that there will always be reasons not to support improved transportation funding, and I've heard a lot of them. I've heard that we have all the money that we need. I've heard that our truck taxes are too high. I've heard that weight mile is not a good tax method for trucks. I've heard that weight mile is the only appropriate tax method for trucks. I've heard that we spend too much money on modes and not in other modes and planning and not enough on highways. And I've heard that we spend too much on highways and not enough on the other modes. I've heard that ODOT is efficient. And we've had audits and efforts to improve the efficiency. I've heard that ODOT shouldn't be involved in access management or other issues related to growth. I believe that all of these reasons ignore two fundamental points that I'd like to begin with and then have you think about as we work through these issues both today and in the future. Our transportation system is deteriorating as we speak, and I'm categorically convinced that it will continue to do so at the current funding levels, that we just will not be able to get ahead of the game with the funding levels that we have today. The second point, as Pete Namas and his committee and the other audits have confirmed, ODOT is a responsible, well-managed organization. It is doing a good job with the resources it has been provided. I don't plan here today to go through every slide in the notebook or to respond to Senator George's presentation, slide by slide. I've tried to collect general themes that I believe Senator George has presented, and I want to talk about three or four of those major points. The three points that I hope to address here is the question of whether or not ODOT has enough money, the question of whether ODOT wastes or inappropriately spends the money that it has, and whether ODOT's priorities are wrong. And in the beginning of the notebook is a presentation that I will refer to, although I don't plan to refer to every slide or every piece of it, in trying to address those three points. The first, ODOT has enough money, and that there's no need for a funding increase. There are three or four points that I plan to make with respect to this question. I want to go through the budget, at least the revenue side of the budget, talk about the increases that we've received, where the money comes from, and what the money is that we currently have in the proposed budget. I want to talk a bit about the allocation to cities and counties and the issue of whether or not we've kept pace with inflation. In one of Senator George's slides, he said that we had a budget of $2.8 billion. The $2.8 billion budget included $200 to $300 million of money that we talked about bonding for preservation.
Mr. Chairman, I would caution the good representatives here to make sure he said correctly what I said. I said that this was a proposed budget, a tentative budget, and I made reference to that very clearly.
I don't disagree with that. It was proposed.
Okay,
it was tentative.
Rhetoric to a minimum.
Well, I didn't mean that rhetoric, Senator. I was just trying to describe the number. Senator George is right. It was a tentative budget. It was not approved and was not sent forward to the legislature. The difference between that number and the number that is in our requested budget, which is what I was going to try to explain, is that we had thought about a significant bonding program for preservation and decided that without new revenue, bonding for preservation was not sound management, that we would be, in a sense, mortgaging the future to pay for our current preservation problems. So we took that provision out and submitted a budget to the legislature and to the governor of $2.582 billion. If you'll refer to this sheet, I'm going to talk a bit from it and show how it relates to our budgets for prior years. This $2.5 billion budget is an increase from 1997 of about $272 million. And as you'll note, 1997 was slightly lower than the prior biennium. The increase that we are proposing for this biennium is made up of a variety of revenue increases. Some of them have been determined, others are simply requests. Of that increase, we're anticipating approximately $45 million of additional revenues from existing weight mile and Oregon gas tax, approximately $12 million from DMV, $140 million of the increase is federal funds, and $70 million is what we call other. Those are largely general fund dollar requests for public transportation and high-speed rail. But the total is $272 million made up of revenues from those various sources. Of that $272 million, you'll see how we have allocated all of the revenues toward cities and counties and to our ending balance in the table below. The increase in revenues to cities and counties, considering state, federal sources, between the two years is $63 million. So if you take our $2.5 billion budget and reduce it by the amount that we expect to distribute to cities and counties and our ending balance, the total that we have at the end of the distributions for ODOT purposes is $1.7 billion. So the $2.5 billion that we began with after we make these distributions is $1.7 billion. So I think that from our perspective, the correct number to look at for ODOT is the net revenues for the biennium proposed of $1.742 billion. That's up from the $1.484 in 1997. And I think we can go through later where the increases are, how the increases are allocated. The issue that we have, I think, is to figure out if we have enough money and if we're spending it correctly. And if you look at this sheet as we work on down through the various amounts, the increases in overhead are roughly the equivalent of our increases in information technology and Y2K expenses that we've incurred. The increase in the safety, rail, aeronautics, and transit divisions are the light rail and high-speed rail requests that are in the general fund budget. That $85 million increase, if it were, it's not any of that from gas tax or weight mile tax. So we end up with an increase in the highway program of $200 million. This $200 million is money that the commission has determined should be spent in priorities that are consistent with our priorities for preservation, improving the bridge program, and improving how we care for the highway. And if you look at the increases across the bottom, you'll see that we've increased safety, proposed to increase safety by $60 million. We've proposed to increase the spending on preservation by $153 million. We propose to increase the spending on bridge by $75 million and reduce the spending on modernization by roughly $70 million. If you do the increases and decreases, what we end up with is all of the $200 million essentially being spent on highway-related projects. The increase that we're getting or proposing in the biennium, other than the funds that are specifically requested from the general fund for the transportation network and high-speed rail, are going directly to improving the preservation, maintenance, organization, and bridges that we seek to continue to keep at least at their current level in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Hewitt?
Yes.
In the second group there, where it begins with driver and motor vehicle services.
Yes.
You have safety, the third category down there, safety, and then rail, aeronautics, transit division. The safety in that category, as opposed to the safety that appears down below under maintenance, can you distinguish those for me?
The safety in that category would be our safety program, education program, awareness program that we conduct, drunk driving program. And there's been a modest increase in that amount in this proposed budget, but the large increases from the 30 to the 115 million are federal and requested general fund money for the high-speed rail program and requested money from the general fund for transportation network for senior and disabled or elderly citizens.
You mentioned the federal component, and I don't have the experience that our transportation committee folks have, but suppose you wanted to transfer funds that you were getting for this high-speed rail, and you wanted to tell somebody that, in your view, it made a whole lot more sense to modernize our highway system. Do you have that freedom?
No, and I don't believe there'd be any discretion to use those dollars on the highway, either at the federal level or at the state level. I think those are specifically earmarked for this kind of project by federal law.
So if we have a beef, You'd give us the numbers of some congressmen and senators.
Yes, I would. These, I think, are it's a program for high-speed rail that if we don't use these funds for that purpose, they won't be used in Oregon. Is my understanding.
Mr. Chairman, Grace Cronican for the record. In the rail program, some of the federal dollars that are there are not earmarked dollars, but are out of the federal railway program and are administered by the Federal Railway Administration. Not all of those dollars are earmarked, but they are earmarked for rail projects, not for anything else.
This would be a good place to pause for your questions on revenue. Go ahead. Entertain.
Okay.
Yes, we're fine.
Thank you. you know, sometimes we have this feeling that maybe Washington doesn't understand the priorities of the states. To the extent you agree, and maybe you don't, do you communicate with our members of Congress and the Senate that perhaps they ought to revise their distribution schemes and realize that we need more roads than we do rail lines?
I can't say that I've ever had that conversation with any of our congressional delegation. I think we've worked hard to achieve as much as we can of each category of legislatively authorized funding, so that as part of our goal to have a balanced transportation system in Oregon, we're working always to get as much of each of the categories under federal law as we can get. But I don't believe, I personally haven't been involved in a discussion whether or not their categories are right.
I guess I would encourage you to do that. May not, again, you may have a different conclusion than I do, but I have this feeling that sometimes we divorce ourselves from realizing that federal funds are actually our funds, and that we all contribute to both pots, federal and state, and that if the states have a better understanding as to what the needs are than those making these decisions 500 miles away, I would hope we would at the very least tell them. And then when they continue to ignore the wants and needs of our citizens, I guess we can express ourselves in other ways.
Mr. Chairman, to the issue of the return, we worked very hard on trying to get the highway dollars back into the highway program. So we did send correspondence, express some interest either in phone calls or visits ourselves. There was 4.3 cents of the highway trust fund that had gone to deficit reduction and one other issue, a small issue, and we've tried to get that money back into the highway program and back out on the road. In the case of the high-speed rail corridors, that program was named out of the Federal Railway Administration's program, and what we did in that case was that one high-speed rail corridor is the Northeast Corridor, and what we tried to do is work with California and Washington to get the high-speed rail corridor named in our, it turned out to be our Northwest from Eugene up to Seattle. But in that case, there was a pot of funds that was set aside for high-speed rail, and the question was, were we going to get named or not named? And we worked to get named so that money could flow to us as opposed to only go to some other spots that were designated and not return to Oregon.
Yes, Chair.
And I have a question,
too. Senator Fannin.
I'd like to ask you a question. By those two answers, would you think that they just somebody called and talked to that our representatives in D.C. about this situation? How much effort, what kind of effort do you think would have been put into it by the answers?
My hope is today is that we're having a discussion. I'm expressing what my view is as one individual senator. I'm advocating to the leaders in our Department of Transportation that if they agree with me at this point, I would encourage them to let our delegation know that at some point, if our more serious needs are addressed, that might be the time to take a look at this high-speed rail thing. Nice, but that's, in my view, that's a luxury.
The reason that I asked you that question is because from those answers, if I were you, I wouldn't have known that they spent about at least $230,000 on lobbyists telling them what Oregon's needs are, according to their commission. And when he said he asked himself, I was wondering, wouldn't you have thought, but I do hire lobbyists, I approve them in the budget, and we do tell them what to tell D.C.?
Yes, but I think that a very high percentage of what we are talking about was the effort to get us up to 100% return to Oregon, getting ICE-T or T-21 done in a way that was best for Oregon. I don't know specifically what our lobbyists were doing, but at least our focus was on not being a donor state, on having funds reallocated to Oregon in an appropriate way, and then trying to maximize what we could out of the various pots of federal money that were going to be available for the states.
Mr. Hewitt, are you saying as chairman of the commission, you don't approve the specific projects that your employees are lobbying for? Because the money comes back project specific. I myself have seen what you've hired these lobbyists to bring the money home to. Are you saying that you didn't know what these projects were?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
The federal money comes back to us. Mm-hmm. That 18.4 cents a gallon comes back project specific. And I've seen the literature that your lobbyists distribute to our, to the Transportation Committee in Congress and the Senate. And I've seen what you are asking for. It's from the Oregon Department of Transportation, of which you're one of the five directors. And are you saying that they just figure out what these five are without any input from, I mean, what these projects are, the millions, how they want? And the reason I say that is because it's flexible dollars, and it doesn't always come back to our roads. And I thought that Senator Miller was saying, are you impressing upon Congress how much we want our roads fixed first? And I thought you were saying, well, I haven't had direct conversation with them. Although what I thought could have added was we hire lobbyists to represent us.
I think that we're briefed regularly on what our federal program is and what we're trying to achieve. And I believe that we understand generally what it is that our lobbyists are doing, but I don't believe we approve specifically project by project things that are being considered. In the last biennium in Congress, there were a number of projects that emanated from local regions that went directly through Congress, men and women that weren't directly an ODOT initiative. Southern Oregon had a project. Eastern Oregon had a project. I think every congressman.
Mr. Hewitt, I'm only just referring, and I don't have it with me, but the specific material that your employees, your attorneys from a fall and whoever it is in Portland were distributing. And I know you're saying it wasn't prioritized, but the first one I think was $123 million for light rail, and it was another $130 for light rail. And it was before roads, but your director said, well, that isn't that prioritized. But if you look at the literature that Oregon Department of Transportation is distributing to Congress, the projects they want funded, the first two are Portland's light rail.
Well, my response, I guess, would be that those were funds that were specifically earmarked by federal law for public transportation. And we have generally, I think, tried to support all of the initiatives for all the transportation providers in Oregon, whether it was ODOT specific or somebody else's. And in that case, those monies were not, those were earmarked for public.
No, those were flexible dollars that had gone to the roads or to what you wanted.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just submit some. We hire the firm, we go through a competitive bidding process. We have a lobbyist that's located in Washington, D.C. We hire the firm of Ball Janik. We pay them about $135,000 a year, which is about $270 a biennium, somewhere in there. The book that Senator Shannon is referring to is the Congressional Briefing Book. A lot has been made out of the fact that when we list projects, we put the transit, we listed the transit project before we listed 20 or 30 highway projects that were there. I make nothing of that. We list a lot of other projects. We basically at the federal level have the issue of fighting for formulas that distribute more money to Oregon, and particularly in the highway program. We spend a lot of our lobbyist time trying to make sure that the allocation of funds that we get to Oregon is as high as we can possibly get, maximizing that. And then there are some programs come in formula and some programs are discretionary. And when they're a discretionary program and Congress sets them up, then what we do at the department is go back and maximize as much as we can the take for Oregon projects that make sense. And so when we were discussing the high-speed rail program, getting it named as a priority corridor was important, and then trying to get the money, be it from the legislation or from Congress, is important. At the point in time we're engaging in that discussion, trying to get that money, it's already been designated in a discretionary pot that's available. And this question as to whether Congress funded aeronautics, funded rail, funded transit or highways is long gone. And we do utilize a lobbyist, and they're very effective in what they do. And the congressional delegation has given us positive response, both for our congressional briefing book and for the folks that we have interacting with them, be it Commissioner Corey, who was our last person to go to Washington and represent ODOT, or myself or the various lobbyists that we have.
And Senator Shannon, I think sometimes the folks in Washington, D.C. set up these impossible choices. And what I'm hearing is that given the choice between pursuing some, as they love to call them, available federal dollars for some specific program or sitting it out, the choice that was made was they would pursue these dollars for a program that would not be, I presume, your priority nor mine. And so what I am, my personal request, not this whole legislature, is just to make my view known to the chairman that I hope that in his next available discussion with our congressional delegation, he will impart that we would like additional flexibility, make available all kinds of federal dollars, if you would, but let us determine how to spend them, whether it be for some rail project or whether it be for preserving or modernizing our highways.
And I have no philosophic debate or difference of view with that comment. I think in the meantime, we once again think it's in our interest to maximize the federal dollars that we bring back to Oregon. If they have a category for public transportation, we want all those dollars we can get. We really don't want to ignore the very real needs of public transportation in the state. My own view, long term, is that we would be better off if we had a much better rail system, both for passengers and for freight, than we have currently. It's one of the great shames of the United States that we can't ship more freight on rail. I'm not sure how all of these pieces fit together and what we would do with the dollars if we really had flexible dollars in every respect. But part of it may be to improve the rail system.
I just didn't want it to slip by that you thought they may have casual conversations because it's all orchestrated and transit and rail and all those are, and then the flexible. I'm talking about the flexible that could go to transit, rail, or roads. And I think that's what you're saying, that we'd like as much of the flexible to go to roads as we can. And I think rail's great. I just think that that just like cars and trucks, it should be subsidized by people that want to use it.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just off the top, it seems to me if you're spending $200,000 a year and bringing home $680 million for that effort, that's a pretty good return on investment. But that aside, with respect to the aeronautics and the rail issues, I'm assuming that the aeronautics is like the highway gas system. You can only use the aeronautics money, which is aeronautics generated at gas on airports.
That's true.
And the rail system, beyond the high speed, we spend a lot of time thinking about that, but my perception is that a lot of the money that we have benefited from the federal government by being designated as a high-speed corridor have mainly gone to improve the rail lines and improve the safety for cars and for trains, which the primary beneficiary, quite frankly, has been the freight system. Is that incorrect?
I'm not sure I could draw that final conclusion, but I do know that our most significant need with respect to high-speed rail is with respect to the condition of the crossings. And so the capital needed is really needed to fix crossings that can't accommodate higher speed traffic. But it is that kind of improvement that we are working on throughout the Willamette Valley Corridor as we talk about the high-speed rail initiative.
And I know in my area that a lot of the freight issues, in fact, we almost lost a lot of timber companies over the years because they couldn't get cars and they couldn't move freight fast enough and had to resort to truck, which has the same problem of people complaining about too many trucks on the roads, but largely that's the result of people having to shift their transportation methods because the rail system wasn't working for them.
I think that's right. I actually have a client in McMinnville who talks about it taking 17 days to get a freight car from McMinnville to Portland.
That's high speed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I would like to ask you about something, talking about the roadbed and the rail crossing, because in fact the freight traffic does gain significant benefit if we upgrade those at the taxpayer's expense. And what have we done to help include the private companies in helping pay for that?
I don't know specifically that I can answer that, but would be happy to get you an answer. I know that in the one the project that I'm most familiar with, which is the Coos Bay Rail Bridge, it was a private-public partnership with significant private money contributed to the project by the rail line that would benefit, the rail company that would benefit.
But specifically, that's not dealing with the high-speed rail because that's a high-speed rail corridor. I'm specifically dealing with the, or referring to the high-speed rail corridor because obviously, if we're ever going to use these systems to their full potential, we're going to significantly have to upgrade the road bed track structure. And if we do that, and I have talked with the lobbyists from the rail industry, from the freight traffic, and they would be more than happy to have the taxpayers pay for all of it, but in my opinion, that's really not fair in any way whatsoever because they will be deriving benefit from it.
I agree.
Did you say your client in McMinnville had trouble getting freight cars?
Mm-hmm. I didn't say that, but that's also been a problem.
What's the problem your client has?
Just the time it took to get a freight movement of goods from McMinnville to Portland.
You didn't say how much time it was. You said it.
I was told it was 17 days.
17 days, okay.
Agreed. No other questions.
Second hand, though, Senator Shane.
Let me go back to the chart on page 3, if I could, please. On the figures below your the gross revenues of 2.582.
Yes.
And you have a series of entries here: fuels, tax, weight, mile, drivers and vehicle license, federal funds, all other. Of those funds, how much of that money is available for roads?
Well, all of the fuel tax is dedicated to the roads. All of the weight mile tax is dedicated to the roads. All of the driver and vehicle licenses dedicated either to running DMV or to the roads.
What is that split currently?
The cost to operate DMV is a subtraction of $125 million down about halfway through the middle of the page. So, based on this, DMV is contributing net benefit roughly $100 million by any.
Right.
I think I would need to do some looking into the other two categories because in those amounts are flexible funds and dedicated funds, and dedicated both to the highway and to public transportation. So there's some of each in each of those other categories.
But and all of the fuel tax could be used for roads?
Must be.
Must be.
Mr. Chairman,
road-related bridges, highway-related.
Mr. Chairman, we just ran those numbers for ways and means, and it seems to me that there may be not counting driver and motor vehicle, I think in there somewhere there's another $50 million. What I'd like to do is present it. If you'd let me bring you that piece of paper back, maybe one of the staff can get it while we're here, somewhere in there where it may not be out of just this set of line items here, but of dollars that are that could go to the road. A large portion of those dollars come out of local government, however, come out of money that we transfer to local government right now.
Right. The point that I was trying to make with this, and maybe I'll go back to it to make sure we don't lose it, is that the first set of columns adds up to the 2.5. It's attempt to show the sources of the funds. There's about $800 million that goes to cities and counties and other agencies off the top. And that's what gets us down to the $1.7 billion ODOT budget that I've shown there at the middle of the page.
Oh, the fuels tax, for example, part of that is part of this number that gets to the cities and counties.
Yes.
And we hear these rumors of things other than roads being paid for. I guess those funds. Some of it goes to administration. I think there's the city in my jurisdiction supposed to be the highest cost administration out of those funds as opposed to it going to the roads. Is that
I'm not sure I understand the question either. I mean, those are constitutionally restricted funds.
Well, they're apparently things that can be associated with
yes.
building roads, like
that's right.
city attorneys or...
Only if it's related to the roads.
Well, I'm sure that they can create a connection.
I don't know anything about the particular circumstances of your community. But the other point I was trying to make with this graph is that of the $272 million increase proposed from 97 to 99, about $63 million of that increase is going to the cities and counties, and about $200 million of it is going directly to increase at the bottom what we're going to spend on safety, preservation, and the bridge program. So the point I want to make is that there's not a lot of seepage going into overhead. In fact, there's very little. If you look at all of the ins and outs in the middle here, other than the increase in the rail and transit division line, which is the high-speed rail and the senior and disabled proposal for general fund money, there's some pluses and minuses, but they basically net out. And the overhead increase that I think we've experienced this year is largely related to technology improvements that we've made that are part of improvements throughout the state government.
Again, I'm sorry, because you've got a nice big notebook here, and I don't want to deprive you of the chance to explain it all, but just of your figures, after you've transferred funds to the cities and counties, you're sitting there with 1.7.
Yes.
And you have a figure here for modernization of roads is $218 million.
That's right.
So $218 million for new roads, for new construction.
That's right.
Out of 1.742.
That's right. And I think, prepared to listen to and work with the legislature to alter the funding priorities that we've established. What we have done is to work to reduce the amount that we're spending on overhead and to be efficient every way we can and to reduce the amount that it costs to run DMV and associated programs of ODOT. That gets us down to the line that you'll see two-thirds of the way down the page, net revenue for highway program. That number increases approximately $200 million from 1997 to the proposed biennium. That's after we've reduced the first number by the cost of DMV, the cost of our motor carrier division, the other mode line, our central services, our development group, and the other. So we have a $200 million increase in revenue going to the highway, if you will, from last biennium to the current biennium proposal. And that $200 million is being allocated entirely to safety, preservation, and bridge, and maintenance. So modernization is going down. But as I attempted to explain last time I was here, at this level of preservation spending, we keep the current highway condition as it is today. It won't get worse. It won't get better. If we spend less, it'll get worse. Bridge expenditure proposal is really designed to begin to address the deferred maintenance and aging bridge condition that we have throughout the state. We don't welcome that problem, but we have it. And our prioritization of that additional $200 million of funding that we have received this biennium is to say that's where our highest priority should be. We would love to have additional funding to increase the amount available for modernization. I don't know how many times I need to say there are projects all over this state, capital projects that we should be working to address. I think distributed to this committee the ABC list. There's $600 million of projects that we would move ahead if we had funding to do so. But at the current pace, that's going to be difficult to do.
Thank you. Senator Shannon.
Have you thought about moving transportation growth management back to LCDC and letting DLCD take it over? And, I mean, $50 million of road fund money for city planning seems like a big hunk and just 12 of, 5 of that is all that Redmond needs to complete their bypass. And we didn't even have TGM, which is a duplication of DLCD in ODOT until 93 or 95.
Well, I think that actually we're working very well together with the local communities and with other state agencies to work through issues of how best to use that money and how best to plan for the growth that we're experiencing. I think the experience in Redmond, where they benefited from use of growth management funds to plan how that community should be developed from a transportation perspective, have been wisely spent. I think the money we spent in McMinnville solving or working to solve how that 3 mile lane would be developed was money well spent. I think if we don't spend money together with the local communities developing transportation plans, frankly, you know my view, we'll have tigered all up and down Highway 99. We're not going to have tigered in McMinnville, and that's the result of good planning, cooperation with local governments and with other state agencies.
How many ODOT employees are in DLCD?
None.
I was just told by a senator much more into this than I am, Mr. Oliver.
None that I know about.
Is there a request this time? Because I was told that it was $10 million in 95, and now it's $50 million of gas tax dollars, and not a penny of it goes to the roads.
Chair Miller, Senator Shannon, the Transportation Growth Management Program is for $10 million. We have a budget request for $10 million of STP, surface federal funds, that would go to the elderly and disabled vehicles, $20 million. And then I think the balance of the money we're talking about, when I say $50 million, a large share that goes to locals, that's not money that goes to planning. That's money that goes to projects. It's our sharing of federal revenues with the local governments beyond what we're legally required to do, basically to sustain some programs the federal government had prior to two federal bills ago. We basically have maintained a flow of funds there. So if we can get these numbers from the Ways and Means Committee report, I think you'll find $10 million is in transportation growth management, $10 million is in the elderly and disabled, and that there's about $12 to $20 million of surface transportation money that's shared with the locals that they use for their roads and bridges. So I don't know where $50 million worth of DLCD money came from.
No, it's transportation growth management. Mr. Chair?
Senator Yee. Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
What?
Senator Castillo also said Mr. Chair both were like,
okay.
We heard from city councilor in Halsey who said that they have to apply for land use planning both to transportation and to land use. He thinks that applying in both places for the same request sounds like it's a real redundant situation. Cities don't have too much, they don't have planning staff, so the city councilors have to volunteer the time to do application and to have to apply twice for the same request sounds to me is really a waste of citizens' efforts and a duplication, yes, of effort.
Chairman Miller, Senator Yee, if what's being referred to as a transportation growth management, which is the program that the $10 million I was talking about, a grant in that category. A lot of those grants are used for coming up with their transportation system plans. We do staff the program, meaning people at DLCD review the document and people at transportation review the document, but I think there's only one grant that's applied for. It could be that they were trying to apply for, I don't know anything about the DLCD program, so it could be they were trying to apply for some separate grant over there, but if you apply for a TGM grant, Transportation Growth Management Grant, I think you just send in one application. If you don't, I agree with you, that's ridiculous, but I think that's the case now. You just fill out one grant, but it does get reviewed by both.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, follow-up question. So will you look into this issue about why do they have to apply twice for the same grant?
We will.
Senator Castillo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering, out of the dollars that go to cities and counties, is it the federal dollars that get passed on to them that they are allowed to use as flexible dollars, or is it it's not the entire pot of money that you would pass on to them? Cause
some of the federal dollars are flexible.
Okay.
None
just
of
a portion of the federal dollars that get passed on to them. And then do you get, Mr. Chair? Sure. Thanks. And can you get, do you get a list, or do they inform you of what they're going to use that money for, or is it basically you just, you pass it on to them and they have, they can use it however they want, or how does that work?
Chairman Miller, Senator Castillo.
I knew I wanted you up here.
we allocate the funds to the locals. If they are building projects with the federal funds, those are most likely listed in the STIP. But we don't have any control. We don't supervise their direct projects. In some cases, they exchange those federal funds. They want them allocated to them, but if they go to cities that are fairly small, it's difficult for them to use the federal requirements, so we trade them back state gas tax dollars. We give them 94 cents for every federal dollar they give us. It's a program that they like. It's called the Federal Exchange Program. Local will be exchanged their STP money. So in that case, they then have gas tax dollars, and those gas tax dollars, there's no reporting, and we don't represent their project in any particular fashion.
And what do local communities mostly use that, those flexible dollars for? What are they investing in local communities?
Chairman Miller, Senator Castillo, I don't know that we've done an analysis. We have no legal responsibility for what's going on. But
okay.
For the most part, I believe the reason the local governments are trying to switch from the federal dollars to the local dollars is that they're using it mostly on smaller projects, on preservation projects, so that the jobs are generally paving. There may be some capital improvement programs that result from that, in which case they do show up in the STIP.
Okay. Thank you.
I think you'd find the split, Senator Castillo, depends upon the region, that would be very different, perhaps, in Southern Oregon than the allocation or use of those flexible dollars might be in the Portland metropolitan area.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, who is your chief construction engineer? I know who your maintenance engineer is.
Okay.
Chairman Miller, Senator Shannon. Tom Lule is the head of the highway operation. Our maintenance engineer behind me is Doug Tindall, and the person that's in charge of project delivery was Cam Gilmore. Cam Gilmore moved on. We haven't permanently replaced that, but we have Mike Woods in the job right now.
That's the same as chief construction.
Senator Miller, Chairman Miller, Senator Shannon, it's the person that's in charge of project delivery, making sure all the projects are out there. I hold Tom Lule directly responsible for the total highway program. He's our state chief engineer.
I think that I would like to now move off of this particular subject. I've been referring frequently to the ODOT program budget, and I've given a copy to every one of the members of the committees that are here today. You've probably received this before, but I urge that in conjunction with reading the notebook, that you also peruse this document. It is the first program budget that we have prepared. It has a wealth of information in it with respect to how we propose spending our budget next biennium and how we've spent it historically. A lot of comparative data, and I think will help you understand where we've been and where we're headed with respect to ODOT funds. In the front, you'll see information on revenues, and then you'll see specific information broken down by a wide, long list of various programs that are part of the ODOT larger budget. One of the subjects that was addressed in Senator George's presentation had to do with ODOT administration. And on page 103 of the program budget,
is a comprehensive table on the history and the proposed levels of spending for ODOT administration. I think that our view is that we should continue to focus on administration and work to reduce the amount of overhead that ODOT has everywhere we can. And that, during the last preparation of the budget, has been a specific focus of the commission. It's been a specific focus of Director Cronican, and I don't want it to be inferred at all that that is something we're not addressing and don't intend to address as we go forward. If you look at this schedule, it shows proposed overhead at 6.33% of total expenditures. We believe that that is an acceptable level of overhead in relation to the budget that we manage. We also understand it to be in line, generally, with the levels of overhead spending in other states. The increase that you see in these 3 years is largely related to technology and technology-related needs that we've had to fund. There's also some shifts of things into overhead that were historically in indirect costs, but largely a budget that's been held flat, subject to normal salary and cost of living adjustments. When Senator George made his presentation, one of the studies listed ODOT as being second highest in the nation with respect to administration. That study, as I understand it, has us spending someplace in the 13% range on administration. I think that includes some other things. I believe it includes planning and research. We've been unable to determine whether we are reporting those figures in the same way as other states. I think most experts have said that it's hard to compare administration numbers specifically from state to state. We have a truck group, for example, in ours. Another state may handle that in the PUC as we did historically. The way in which administration is allocated and dealt with from state to state is not consistent, and we've been unable to determine how other states reported their administration and costs into that study that was done. I think other surveys that have been done lead us to believe that we're not out of line in terms of the level of overhead, and in fact would not be at the second worst if we could figure out how to really compare apples to apples or oranges to oranges, which we've not been able to do. I want to assure you that we're working to improve the overhead and indirect cost structure of ODOT, and I think the very same study that Senator George referred to has been republished, and although I don't remember the specifics of it, I think ODOT, even in that study, has improved over where it was in the study that Senator George referred to. I think that it would be a point at this point to take any questions that any of you might have on how we spend overhead, what the overhead numbers are, but they're very well presented on page 103. The details of each one of these items is covered in a separate section in the program budget.
I would ask about just one of those, keying off an earlier discussion on our friends who do the lobbying efforts. You do have an entry here under Central Services, Communications, Government Relations, Public Affairs, and Employee Committee, I guess. Or
can you tell me which page you're on?
On page 109.
109. Yes.
And it appears we have a budget request total of $5,377,207. That's apparently a bit more than the lobbying effort that was earlier described.
I mean, Chairman Miller, that budget is for all of our publications, all of our employee contacts, our newsletters, all of our outreach efforts. In terms of the STIP, I believe some of the mailings that are developed in that department It has our lobbying effort, but that would be, I believe there are four, do we have four FTE in the government relations, which includes Jones Plank, our local government, for our legislative lobbyist and others. It's quite a broad portfolio of responsibilities. The contract for lobbying in Washington is about $270,000 per biennium.
All right. I appreciate that explanation. Thank you. Proceed.
I think reviewing pages 106 through 109 is also a good thing to do. I think it's been suggested that we don't know how much it costs to fix a pothole. And I think what this will show you is that in the aggregate, we certainly do know what we're spending in maintenance. That's at the top of page 106. And for the first time, we've divided maintenance, which is the backbone of the ODOT operations, into categories of expenditures. So when people want to know how we're spending in the aggregate our $305 million proposed budget for maintenance, we have shown here by programs how we expect to spend that money. That's the allocation of people, that's the allocation of equipment, and that's the asphalt and other things that are needed in order to carry out those various functions. With respect to the cost of the pothole, I think that's a very difficult question for us to consider. I think it always then makes us want to say which pothole, how big was it, and how long did it take our people to get there to fix it. I view it not unlike asking somebody in the wood products business how much did it cost to cut a tree. And although they know what the cost is to do their logging, any particular tree depends upon where it is, depends on how big it is, it depends upon how steep the slope was, and a variety of other things. So I think we are trying here for the first time to present by program how we are spending things within larger limitations. This limitation of maintenance is one that has, I think, had a fair amount of review, but this will indicate of that amount how much we spend on or expect to spend on snow and ice in this biennium compared with last and in the other categories that you'll see there. If you work on through this program budget, you will see how the dollars have been allocated by each of the broad categories that we're responsible for administering. I think I'd take any other questions that you might have on administration or overhead.
You have one entry here, well, there are many, but special programs, 107, and there's a reference here to page 34. Among the entries, and maybe it's, I don't know whether this would be ADA or something, but civil rights is going from $639,000 to $4,342,000. What is the...
See if somebody here can answer that question, because I don't think I can.
General Highway Program.
Chairman
Miller, I'm going to introduce Doug Tindall. The civil rights program is comprehensive, it's part of the highway portion of the program. You'll see it in the highway budget, not in the general ODOT. It's basically in response to the federal highway administration's administration of programs like the disadvantaged business enterprises and similar focus. And so I'm going to ask Doug.
Chairman Miller, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Tindall, maintenance engineer with the Department of Transportation. The civil rights number, a couple of things have happened. There are new federal requirements in that program that have caused us to increase our expenditures. We've also, part of the conundrum in this budget a little bit, and comparing last biennium with this biennium, is that we consolidated some things that were, we had civil rights spread out into the construction program, and we've consolidated them in. So two things. One is that some of the money was shown last year would have been shown in last year's construction budget, and secondly, that we've expanded the program in line with federal requirements.
Okay. Thank you for the explanation. Any questions?
I think the next subject I'd like to talk about, and we have already addressed it both in some of my remarks and in response to some of your questions, is the notion that ODOT's priorities are wrong. We're prepared to discuss our priorities. Certainly the commission is. Our priority has been to run the operation of ODOT effectively, efficiently, and cost-effectively, to reduce the overhead and the costs associated with the running of the business, and to apply all of the funds we can to the programs that we're responsible for. Having done that, our priority currently with our funding levels has been to preserve the existing system. We really believe it would be a mistake not to preserve the highway system, at least in its current condition, and spend the money that is necessary to prevent it from deteriorating from where it is today. A long list of modernization projects that I've alluded to. Our priority would be to move forward on those projects if we had additional funding. And we're also prepared to talk about, with this committee, with the Ways and Means Committee, with all of the legislature, on how we should readjust what we're spending our money on from where it's currently being spent to the extent we can to move more money to the projects and programs of ODOT. That's been the focus of the commission. I think it's been the focus of Director Krunikin, but our priority has been, when we get the funds available for the program, to maintain the condition of the highway system as we have it. There's been a lot of discussion about ODOT and the other modes. I think we believe philosophically we need a balanced transportation system. We should have and would try to get additional funding for modes other than the highway, not from the trust fund, not from the gas tax, but as funds are available for us to support public transportation, to support aeronautics, and to support rail. I think we believe that a balanced transportation system for this state is the system that will best serve the needs as we face the growth that we're experiencing, particularly in the Willamette Valley. But in this budget, the amount spent on other modes is a very small percentage of the total budget, and it's all contained in the Safety, Rail, Aeronautics, and Transit Division's line. And the major increase that's anticipated there is, as I referred to earlier, the requests that have been made for improved funding for a transportation network in the state of Oregon for elderly and disabled citizens, and a proposal for high-speed rail. I think I'd take questions on our priorities.
I guess one of the things I just observed is, I don't know, you address it the best way you can, is I think when citizens are out driving the roads that you are saying is your highest priority to preserve, among your highest priorities, and they are, I think we would admit, not what they used to be, and they're in serious trouble. At the same time that we experience that drive on roads that are falling apart, where we head out to a grand opening of a light rail that is extraordinarily expensive. Given that so few citizens actually use that train, I guess what I'm saying to you is, you understand, I guess, the frustrations of people who supply the money and who become confused about the priorities. I mean, it is fine to be here and say we need a balanced approach, but that, I think, denies the fact that most people utilize the road and realize they're desperately overcrowded. Going to Portland from suburbs is a nightmare, not just at the typical rush hour, but at all hours.
Mm-hmm.
And we have kind of, I guess, satisfied ourselves to say, well, we're going to do everything in a mediocre to poor way, as opposed to having maybe a slightly unbalanced but a whole lot more a better system to manage the kind of traffic that we have, and recognition that people drive cars. That's a long, rambling statement. But
well, you know, what I think I believe, we still need to invest in all the modes. We need to improve the highway infrastructure, and we need better public transportation. The trade-off and whose budget is being used for which purpose, I think, is complex. This budget was not used to support that project. This is largely a highway budget. Having said that, I don't believe that Highway 26 can work into the next 10 years without significant use of public transportation and using the highway system better than we've used it historically. The system really cannot work just simply by adding additional lanes or digging additional tunnels. So someplace there's a balance between those two needs in that particular corridor. I don't think we have the wisdom here today to sort out where that balance should be, other than I'm convinced we need to invest in both. This budget is the highway piece of that.
I appreciate that. And it goes back to my earlier statement about your conversations with people in Washington, D.C. I think it is less than satisfactory to say, well, that project is federal funds. Gosh, we only have control over this. I think to those people who are footing the bill, which is everybody, they'd like to have, again, the flexibility that I spoke of earlier. At least that's my opinion. Your questions, Senator Yee?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question on administrative costs.
Sure.
Well, when we talk to the auditor, they say DMV has 38.2% in administrative costs. When I talk to your department, you say 6% because you don't include indirect costs. You don't include overhead. So in your administrative costs, do you include overhead or not?
Chairman Miller, Senator Yee, we have administrative costs, we have indirect costs, and we have direct costs. If you've got a highway project and you, until they ask for my resignation, you'll have me to pay as a, say, an overhead cost, an administrative cost. The folks that develop the standards that are the standards by which we build construction projects by are part of the indirect cost. What they do can't be allocated to a specific project, so it's an indirect cost. For those people that designed that job, that highway project, and for the contractor payments and for the materials that went into that job, those are direct costs. So when you're in the highway program, we identify administrative costs, which are 6.33. There's an indirect cost, which does get you, I think there's about 15% is indirect cost. It though, if you decided not to build so many projects, it too would come down. It has some relationship to the direct cost, and then there are the direct costs. At DMV, I think the confusion is in the kind of work that they do. They too have a fairly low administrative cost, but it is higher because the nature of the work is regulatory, and there's a lot more work that goes on in developing the regulations than is allocated to a particular function like driver, like the issuing of a license plate, for example. So I don't know that we have a category in DMV that's called indirect. Do we? But now here's Mike Marsh.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, if I could, Mike Marsh from ODOT. It's correct that we have the three categories. When the Secretary of State talks about the 30% or 32% level, they're discussing, well, Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, there was some disagreement in their study initially. There were a couple percentage points of change in the final study, but we would agree with them that the total overhead amount, indirect and administrative costs, is correctly labeled at that figure. The concern is that when you're talking about indirect costs in DMV, you're talking about several different functions that they perform that are not part of a standard highway program, for instance. They not only have to do all the administrative work of getting the payments for all the various permits and licenses that they work with, they also have a hearings process that relates to determining whether people ought to have licenses revoked or other processes that result in more administrative costs there than in a program where you're doing the highway work, putting asphalt on the highway. So there is more administration with DMV due to the nature of the work that they have. And we're working very close with the Secretary of State to make sure that the process and definitions that we have are ones that they concur with. And that study, that the audit that they performed, came very close to doing that. We're working now to make sure that we're totally in sync. And the numbers that you see in the program budget here are that integration and agreement. So the numbers in here for administrative costs are agreed to by Secretary of State. They would also say that indirect costs are another component. They aren't totally administration. They're something that we want to be concerned about. But in a DMV function, you do have a significant amount of support costs in working with those customers.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you're working with Secretary of State's office in coming together with definition of what is administrative cost, what is indirect cost, because we don't want to get two different answers. One says 38.2% administrative costs, and the other one says 6% plus indirect costs or overhead. So I'm glad you're working out this clear definition of what it is, because when we want to know how much is pothole, we want to know how much is pothole instead of getting two different answers. I would like to ask another question, if I might.
Go ahead.
Thank you. On page 4, under available revenues, page 4 of this
notebook.
In the notebook, white color, hardcover notebook. Under available revenue, under bullet 3, 5, and 6, you mean 1.959 billion, not million.
You're correct, Senator Yee.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, what that is meant to say is that is the millions there, so it's 1,959 millions. Yes.
Yeah, either 1,959 million or 1.959 billion.
It looks better tabbed than million. It looks smaller.
But if it's million, then it should be a comma.
That's the tricky way of doing it.
Same with bullet 5 and bullet 4.
One other subject on priorities. We select projects for the STIP in a public process. The projects that we move forward are projects that I think we've heard from local regions throughout the state are important to those communities. In the last biennium, we've established area commissions on transportation in a number of regions and expect to follow that model in other regions to provide a direct link between ODOT and local communities. In this context, local communities are county governments, city governments, businesses, and the state in developing priorities for transportation investment. This has worked extremely well where we've established them. The first was in Southern Oregon. We have now two in the Willamette Valley and are forming one in Redmond. And I think that it is how we prioritize. I think our problem isn't with any particular region deciding what its highest priority is for transportation. It's that they have appetites and needs that exceed the available resources. So they're always thinking that they should get more of the share from other regions. And we have a tremendous balancing act in context of short resources trying to develop priorities that extend beyond a single community. I think the commission historically has done that the right way, and will try to do that consistent with inputs that we get in the STIP process going forward. But when we're trying to allocate the amount of money that we have for modernization to the hundreds of millions of dollars of projects that all expect to be selected next, it's a thankless task.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, one more question. That was chair of the committee question. She has to go to a meeting at the present time, and she wants me to ask a question for her. And she wants to know, what does it cost for the department to prepare the response to Senator George's presentation?
I'm afraid we'd have to determination of time of people, because we have invested a lot of time in responding, and I think it's an appropriate thing for us to do, but I couldn't give you a number or an amount.
Will you provide a response when you research how much is the time you put in?
In Senator George's presentation toward the end, there are also several slides that I think address growth management issues and what ODOT and the commission are doing managing communities and how they develop. I think there was a slide on Stafford Road Interchange and a slide on Canyon Road near Beaverton and some others that I didn't recognize that I'm not sure were ODOT projects. I think it's important for me to say that what we're trying to do is facilitate development in the right places and to facilitate community growth in the right places and to allow communities to be both share the highway for their needs and to share the highway for through traffic. This is a very complex, difficult thing to do in places like Redmond, Sherwood, Seaside, Newburgh, and communities around the state where we have critically important transportation facilities going through the middle of a town. Our recent efforts in growth management have, I think, tried to define what the priority should be in particular places. We are embarking on an effort to determine what the priority should be in particular places. This will be a collaborative effort between ODOT and local communities. And in some places, I believe we will conclude that the highway should give priority to the local community. We want Newburgh to be a town. We want Redmond to be a town. That will mean slowing the traffic, creating better access, and facilitating development in some places. I think we also want to keep that from spreading up and down the highway. So the discussion will be, where does the town end and the highway begin again, particularly on important roads like Highway 97 and 99. We haven't had that debate, but I think everyone is aligned on the need to have it to help us define where the communities should give way to the highway priority. It's the result we reach, I think, with the realization that we won't be able to fund bypasses for every community. Bypasses should be the solution in some places, but we won't be able to fund a bypass for every community. So in the meantime, we need to balance this use of the highway between the town and the local community and the highway as we grow, because I think we're going to continue to grow. Our efforts in that regard simply have been to work with the communities to develop the right kind of priorities for each piece of the highway.
Thank you, Senator Wilde.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to get to another committee, but I've heard in the past and I've heard in the present that ODOT and the Commission are frustrated with the way the legislature looks at them, and I would just like to express my personal frustration with the way the Commission and ODOT have functioned. And I think their program budget is ideal for stating that. I mean, I look under maintenance and under roadside and vegetation, we've gone from 27.683 to 35.026, which is a reasonable increase considering they do have increased funds. Then you go to bridge maintenance, which has fallen from 29.695 to 14.069. We go to emergency maintenance, which has fallen from 77.902 to 18.743. And it seems to me an excellent way of demonstrating to the public and showing them that things are falling apart and pushing them to increase the gas tax, but I think it's tremendously irresponsible. And then to turn around under transportation development, under planning and support, to increase that from 8.669 to 45.212. I mean, our priorities are really screwed up. And I think I've made my statement, and now I shall go to my next committee. Thank you.
Thank you for your attendance.
Well, I'd like an opportunity to meet to respond when you have a time to discuss, Senator.
Are there other questions?
I do.
Senator Shannon?
Can
we respond to the question, even if he's harder?
Yeah, I think because of our intense interest, and it should be given the amount of funds and the importance of this commission, if I would be pleased to have a future opportunity to go into the response that we haven't yet approached that is at the back of your book, and I would, for whatever expenditures were put into this, I wouldn't want us to miss the opportunity to explore it thoroughly. So, and I know members have other commitments at 4:30, so I'll let Senator Shannon, you ask your questions, and then we might wrap it up for today.
That would be fine. Well, my question is that if when you come back, I would like to have, and I know my office requested if we couldn't be here, the right-of-way, because I'm interested, not because it's a terribly big expenditure, but because I think it's indicative of other decisions. And that is, this is what I was told about the highway, the light rail between the airport and the, the Gresham area. And that 205 was purchased in the 70s with highway trust fund money, which is limited to highway use. And when you purchase that land, extra width was purchased for transit, which is a legal use of road fund money. We can build roads that transit runs on. And when the federal government, I don't know if just the people in the 70s applied for or what, but the federal government realized they'd purchased all this, and they reimbursed the Oregon's trust fund with 92% of that money. And it's my understanding that I've been told by contractors that when all of the port and Multnomah County and the city of Portland and ODOT got together to put together an attractive package for Bechtel, a private company, ODOT said, well, we'll give you the right-of-way to build light rail. And then I heard that when I went in and asked questions, that, and this was not former administration, but this one said, well, you're going to have to pay for 8% of it. And we asked the right-of-way man, how much is that land worth? And he said, well, it hasn't really been appraised, but I would say probably $3 million. And so Bechtel gets 92% of that light rail land free because it was the explanation that was to us was that the director thought that since it was federal money that came back to our trust fund, that we really could consider those dollars flexible. And we don't have to really, put that back in the trust fund, although I'm sure that's where it was put in the 70s. And that Oregon Department of Transportation Trust Fund, Bechtel is not paying the full value of that land, that right-of-way land. And when I asked lobbyists about it, they said, well, it's legal. It's legal to just charge 8% of the value of the land. And I think it may be legal. But is it ethical because Oregonians do not want their gas tax money going for light rail?
Senator Shannon, Chair Miller, this is a new issue for me. I'm not sure that I understand the issues that Senator Shannon is raising, but I would welcome the opportunity to respond to the letter.
My issue is that Bechtel should have paid full value of the right-of-way.
Mr. Chairman, I think we will follow up in writing. We've put some of this in writing already, but in rough terms, the I-205 corridor, when it was originally purchased, was purchased with the design in mind to build a transit busway, transitway of some kind in the right-of-way of I-205. So when federal funds were initially used, they were used to buy both transit and highway right-of-way. They reserved the space. So the whole corridor that is in question between the Banfield and the airport had in mind a light rail line, including the on into Vancouver, so the Jackson Bridge was designed to accommodate at some point in the future, or some assurances were provided by ODOT to the city at that time. So the plan was initially for transit. Since that time, the Portland Metro region has gone through various gyrations trying to figure out what they wanted to do with that particular area. The plan that was brought to ODOT was a combination of TriMet, the Port of Portland, and Bechtel where there was a deal where Bechtel, I believe Bechtel and the port managed the port property, and TriMet was doing the line between the Banfield and the airport. So there are three parties involved there. We have T21 legislation, which says if transit right-of-way, federal right-of-way, can go to other transportation purposes, it should go to other transportation purposes, and you should allow for that other transportation purpose to utilize what's there. And that at the time, interstate money was used to purchase that, and due to ODOT's particular situation, we ended up paying 92% of the cost of that with interstate money. So or federal money with interstate was 92%.
The reimbursement.
So we have 8% of the project was paid for with state gas tax dollars, and it's that 8% we're trying to get recovery of, and since it's another transportation use, allow it. Now, preceding that, we have to go through a number of procedures where we determine is the right-of-way surplus or is the right-of-way necessary to own some control over because we're operating a freeway there. We made the decision that, and the determination along with the feds, that we ought to keep ownership of most of the property, and that the work that goes on in that right-of-way, we need to maintain some control over so that we can work with whoever is using it. There are some exceptions where property may be abutting the back of I-205 might come in. There are many cases where we're actually in the middle of the right-of-way, and you really couldn't put anything, you couldn't develop the middle of the interstate for anything else. So combination of analysis over the whole thing, we've come up with the 8% for the return to the Highway Trust Fund as a principal we're applying, and then we're going through the property, looking at the property that's involved, and would require repayment of that. It's pretty, I think, cut and dried on intent of the project, intent of the purpose, and limited use by any other property owner along the way. And I'd be happy to provide you that in writing or with additional facts and figures as we can put them in.
We can explore that more fully at our next meeting. And since we are running a little bit beyond time, Senator George, you asked for a little time today.
Overhead projector, if I could.
Right ahead.
Before Senator George makes his remarks, I think that I do want to respond to Senator Wild's observations and express frustration. But it points out how complex and difficult these budgets are, because he looks at what's going on in maintenance and then looks at what's going on in transportation development. And we don't have the opportunity to explain again that the increase in transportation development is largely federal money running through our budget to local governments. The $20 million is T21 projects that he is saying we're selecting the wrong priorities for that additional $20 million, and we have nothing to do with those priorities. So we have a constant need to communicate about what we're deciding to do, what we're not deciding to do, and what choices we can make and what choices we can't make. Because the particular example that he gave that frustrated him was pointing out an increase that he thought was a wrong priority that wasn't determined by the commission.
We've got to get those feds to loosen up.
I'm not saying they're bad projects, because those are probably very good local road projects that Senator Wild would support if he knew about them.
I'm sure they're outstanding. They're just probably not the, necessarily the highest priorities of this committee or the state. Senator George, did you have some presentation you want to make? A brief one?
Brief. I would prefer that the group Senator stay here because of the things that were said, and I think they need to have an interpretation before they start reading that.
How much time do you estimate that you will take?
Well, I just had a call, and I'm supposed to be in my committee. So
right.
You can give me about 5 minutes. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, State Senator Gary George, District 2, I would like to note also for the record, Mr. Chairman, that in the preparation for the first debate that occurred about 1 month ago, we were both ODOT and I were given the same amount of time. My responses to them, I would love to go ahead and present a complete response, but we had used 1 hour and 40 minutes, and we only have 15 or 20 minutes left, and I promised you 5 minutes. And that is not a complaint or against you particularly. just a statement of where we are in relationship to the debate, and I would hope that we'll have time to come back. I do not have 5,000-person staff in order to address this stuff, but I think I can explain to you the numbers. Also, when you go through their brochure, when you go through their booklet, the response to my numbers, take your calculator with you. Okay, one of the numbers that was mentioned in there was the $54 million, and I will get to the page of that in just a second. Let's back up just a little bit, and I'll put another one up here. Okay, this was, I don't have the page right now. Sorry, I had that all in order, and I stepped up and I shuffled it. But anyway, the question was whether or not that $54 million is correct. And you can see this was a number used by Henry Hewitt. It does also reflect what the statutes say. The numbers that we achieved in relationship to the 298 and the $541 million for the project, as you'll see right here, this is quoting the governor, $90 million. You remember I used $85 million. The reason I used $85 million, that's the number that's always been used. The other number that was in there was, in fact, the number that for the Astoria bypass, which was the number that I got from Senator Dukes, and the other number representing the Lebanon project was the number that I got from the senator reflecting that from that district, and that was Senator Yee. This piece right here, ODOT contacted my office, and obviously we provided them all that information. When they asked where did this number come from, I told them to check their own information because I think an agency ought to know their information. This is it. It's a big, thick book called the Pacific Northwest Rail Corridor. The number, the page, is number 4, and it's number 18 on the page, and there's the number right there, and that's the exact number that's here. This quote right here, this happened first and slow down the traffic, is one of ODOT's employees talking about the Newburgh Dundee. Actually, the city of Newburgh. That is exactly what is happening, and I stand by that quote. I can show you that. It's from communication from the Mid-Willamette Valley Transportation Commission.
Was that someone's impression as to what was happening, or
no,
was it an intended purpose?
First of all, if you tell me Senator Joyce has a very rugged face, I might say that means I have a big nose. That would be my decision to say I have a big nose. This is from the first page on that thing, and it says, that waste money and the wrong priorities statement is the conclusion of theirs only. I presented this information to you, Mr. Chairman, for one reason. I think we made big progress here today, and that is we need to know why we have gone from only an 18% population increase, this kind of vehicle mile travel, that kind of revenue increase. Now, you'll notice those numbers. They don't refute these numbers. That much net after consumer price index, this much decrease in highways for the period of time, and that much increase in congestion. With that, I'll be glad to come back and address you with a complete analysis of the presentation. But I think those issues were critical enough that we need to address them. The numbers I have are their numbers or are numbers from other senators or from AAA, and I'd be glad to defend them anytime, anywhere. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator George and Mr. Hewitt and Grace Krunikin. We thank you for coming today, and our purpose here is to try to get information that we can feel comfortable relying on when we make these decisions about transportation. I realize there is some degree of tension, but really I just want all those who are participating to know that really our purpose is just to discover the facts that we can rely upon. So nobody's hopefully being unduly critical, and that's our mission. But
if I could really quickly, the $54 million was on page 50 of the piece that they handed out. The reference to the $183 million was on page 119. On the backside, they make reference to the fact that they did not build the sewer treatment plant. What I said that day was that we paid for a VistaPoint at the sewer treatment plant. And that is exactly what is there, if you look at the picture again, in Lake Oswego relative to that trolley roundhouse, the vista point that was provided.
Thank you again. Anything further to come before the committee? We are adjourned.